The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats.com and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiri's.ie
on News Talk.
Now, I am joined by Gina London, leadership communications expert, Sunday Independent columnist and former CNN anchor, and Jack Horgan-Jones, political reporter with the Irish Times. And Jack, in your absence earlier on, I was referring to that piece that you had written in the Irish Times in relation to the Stardust. We have just spoken to Antoinette Keegan, and she has talked about the 40-year struggle, as she described it, to actually get truth from the state. Can you give us a sense of what the families have been through across that period?
Well, I mean, they've been through hell, really. On top of the trauma of the loss of their loved ones, they have, as Antoinette explained, been up against the state in various forms and through various expressions, inquests, commissions over 40 years. So you go back to 1982, the year after the tragedy, and the Keane Commission was set up. And the Keane Commission made this finding that the likely cause of the fire was arson. And the reason that that matters is that the families felt that that, in effect, kind of quasi-criminalized the people who had died in the fire because it made them potential arsonists. Another effect that it had was that the Butterley family, who owned the Stardust, was able to claim compensation at the time, £560,000. That would have bought you 20 houses in Artane at the time. So the
£500,000 in 1983.
£560,000 in 1982, yeah. So a huge amount of money. So basically, the fight goes on from there until 2008. There's a review by Paul Coffey, which removes arson. So that takes that stain out, and the families are very vindicated by that. They continue gathering more and more evidence. In 2017, the minority government at that time, Finney McGrath, had some input into this. They appoint Pat McCartan, a retired High Court judge, to undertake another inquiry. He actually finds no new investigation is warranted. So that's a blow. That's a setback to the families. They say they're not going to stop fighting, as has been a repeating theme throughout this entire process. And they go away and they start working with a lawyer called Darren Mackin. Darren Mackin makes submission to the Attorney General in 2019, Seamus Wolfe, arguing basically that the way to properly look at this is through the coroner's court, because the coronial inquest at the time, the contemporaneous one back in 1981, just kind of established the medical cause of death. He said, look at it and try and establish the underlying cause of death. Wolfe agrees. He says there should be new inquests. It's bounced to the coroner's court. Hearing start April 2023, so last year. They continue up until obviously this year. And that brings us up to today, the finding of unlawful killing. No blame assigned to anyone, it must be said. But that is the vindication that the families have been looking for all that time. And the question now becomes whether there's any further Garda-related or civil actions, but also bounces right into the political sphere. This question of, I mean, it's not a question anymore. It seems to be decided that there will be a state apology, but what form it takes, what flows from that thereafter, are all the questions. But it's the culmination of a remarkable decades-long struggle.
Is there anything staying the state's hand in relation to that apology? Because we have seen previous instances where the state may have been wary of creating liability for itself in giving a public apology. Or can Simon Harris be as full as the Stardust survivors and victims want him to be?
Well, so there's a bit to puzzle through there, right? So if you look at previous state apologies, mother and baby homes, Magdalen's, the Ryan report into the sexual abuse of children in residential institutions and by the church, generally they have been followed by a redress scheme. Those redress schemes haven't always been to the liking of survivors, but they have been established. So I suppose the question is, you know, what's the extent of the state's culpability in this? Like the Stardust, obviously, itself was not a state-owned institution or wasn't kind of run with the connivance or participation of the state in the way residential institutions were. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what flows from this apology. I think in the first instance, it's about hearing and speaking and meeting with the families, which is going to happen. The Taoiseach Simon Harris is meeting them today. And they're but some of the language that the families are looking for, they're looking for an acknowledgement of the systemic abuse, they say, by the state. So there's that question of state culpability, and the degree to which the Taoiseach will go down that road and what flows from that are things that I think we'll all be looking for both today. I think he's going to speak to the media after the meeting with the families, and in Tuesday when he makes the apology in the Dáil.
But I should say again, our panel this morning, that is Jack Horgan-Jones from the Irish Times. We're joined as well by Gina London from the Sunday Independent, previously CNN. Gina, for a lot of people who grew up in Ireland, they grew up with the Stardust. It is one of those things that is sort of burned into everybody's consciousness. Forgive my phraseology. That is in everybody's consciousness. You would have discovered it afresh on arrival. What's your reaction both to the story and to the findings this week?
Oh, thanks. On a personal note, about 5 years ago, I was invited to a play in Dublin that was actually about the Stardust, written by a daughter of one of the survivors. And I hadn't heard of this before. And I cried because they portrayed the young people that were there and people were getting engaged. And I mean, it was just the liveliness of this big venue that and what happened. And then even though that it was in the 80s and it's been years and years and years, these types of tragedies, they never heal fully. And when
will the apology go some way to that?
Well, this is what I was, as I was listening to Jack so well explain what had happened since and what now might be coming on Tuesday or what we expect is going to come on Tuesday. Yes, it will give some, it will never bring these people back, obviously, and it will never repair what wasn't done in order to prevent the fire from happening, of course. But the psychology of an apology, this is a very significant time for Simon Harris to demonstrate what he's capable of in his compassion and communications and how he listens to these families today and over the time that he meets with them in advance of this speech and the words that he chooses to use from them. Maybe he can't go as far as some of the things that they're asking, but if he can incorporate their language to show he was really listening and name some of them and really make this apology needs to be sincere, of course. It also needs to be specific, if at all possible. And I know that Jack said that there's potential questions about ongoing liability and things like that, which and civil suits going forward and things like that. So there, of course, needs to be some sensitivity from a realistic political point of view, which these things don't work in a vacuum. But as much as the Taoiseach can be extremely sincere and extremely specific, the apology is needed, it's required, and it will help, of course.
Is he helped to some degree, Jack, in the apology that he can give by virtue of his youth? He is not a politician who was around at the time. He wasn't involved in politics. I don't think he was even born at the time.
No, 81, no, Harris 37, so that, you know, several years before he was born. I think to an extent, yeah, you know, I mean, he comes to it unencumbered by any of the baggage that, you know, previous political generations would have had. But I think that's probably true of, you know, the generation that preceded him as well. This is, you know, it's very much firmly, you know, chronologically in the past, not in the past for the survivors or for the families of those who died. I think that it plays to his strengths in some ways. And I don't want to kind of make this into a political game because it cheapens the very real trauma that people have gone through. But just to dwell on that for a moment, I mean, Harris is seen as a politician, one of whose strengths is empathy and communication and all those things that Gina was talking about. So I think it's perhaps an opportunity for him to use those talents to, you know, make a true and, you know, warmly felt, I suppose, apology on behalf of the state to those survivors. But I think as much as the apology in the Dáil is a very important set piece, it is also about the meeting today. You know, it is also about that acknowledgement and that communication that will go back and forth between the parties. So I think that the focus is on him because, you know, you have to land something like this from a political point of view. It can't be seen as a political contrivance. It can't be seen as, you know, being done to be politically expedient. It has to be true and heartfelt. So, you know, that's what's going to be asked of him.
What of the families then, Gina? Because for something that, obviously for something as significantly traumatic as this was back in the 80s, it is desperately difficult to be able to move past it. If you have then dedicated 40 years to campaigning about it, is it possible to draw an emotional line under it? Is it possible to say, okay, we are now finished?
I don't think so, in the sense that these people who have come together and formalize themselves as a group to go and ask and require all the ongoing thought and care and changes that they've been. They're a group, and they're a support group. And I've covered school shootings, and I've covered 9/11, and I've covered tragedies, and these bonds that are formed won't suddenly, you won't not continue to meet with them. You won't not continue to need that emotional support. And I think that's a good thing in the sense that they have formed an emotional connection, and they should continue to have that emotional connection. And just on a quick personal level, my father, not in a tragedy like a fire, but as a plane crash of a small single engine plane, died. He was a pilot, and he died when I was 11 years old, and that's been decades. And that question around how it happened and why it happened and what could have led to it, because he was by himself at the time. There are always questions that will always remain with you for the rest of your life, and they frame who you are from that point forward. That timeline of your life is forever irrevocably changed. And so the apology will help. Will it completely heal? No, of course, nothing will. And so to continue to be there for each other and to talk to each other and support each other and listen to each other is essential for these people.
A text to 53106. And by the way, 53106 at a cost of 30 cents, or 087-1400-106 on WhatsApp. Congratulations to all that fought for the truth. And also not forgetting Charlie Bird for his tireless campaigning too, because of course Charlie Bird reporting on it at the outset and then staying very closely involved in the story thereafter. Okay, other issues. Jack, front of the Irish Indo, trouble at Mill. Ryan clashes with Martin over €2 billion splurge. We are being told effectively that Micheál Martin came home to government buildings after the Ardèche to meet an irked Eamon Ryan, who said, "You're after wasting €2 billion."
Yeah, I'm writing about this as well. I'm on page 8 of the Irish Times and picked up some of the same kind of fallout. Eamon Ryan seems to have a bit of a bee in his bonnet over the degree to which the other parties in coalition have been out making basically budget promises in April. So he was talking to
Eamon Ryan's bonnet is usually not filled with bees. This is unusual for Eamon Ryan, isn't it?
Well, he's very into nature restoration, so wherever he can get the bees to build
protect
a hive,
the bees.
Bonnet or otherwise, yeah,
more bees.
But no, he's clearly irked by this. You know, I was talking to him during the week, and the interview is in the Irish Times for anyone wants to read it. And he's talking about how it's a kind of politically difficult thing for other parties to be doing, to go out and making these promises. He's talking about how we're entering into a kind of tenser, trickier period for government. And I think that's true, because we have been on a kind of slow path towards elections. That has rapidly sped up in the last little while with the ascension of Simon Harris and the uncertainty that introduces. So we can now expect this coalition, which has been by and large extremely harmonious after a bumpy start back in 2020, to start bucking against each other, trying to differentiate each other, trying to, you know, basically get the electorate's attention. And I think that's what Eamon Ryan is kind of kicking out against, because that's not really his style. He's not really a kind of, you know, early budget promiser. But I think the political exigencies of the situation dictate that,
Well, shouldn't Ryan be aware of the political exigencies?
Well, the political, that's a great word. I don't even think I can repeat it. But the political realities are that we had, Fine Gael had their conference, Fianna Fáil just had theirs, and sorry, but Green was last, and theirs is this evening. So he didn't get out in front to be able to say, here's what we're going to do, here's what we're going to promise, and look, let's be honest, political campaign promises, which is essentially what this is on behalf of each of the parties, are not always things that come to fruition. Are we going to really see 250,000 new houses in the next 5 years? I don't know. That's what Fine Gael has promised. Let's see what all
you
these...
You cynic,
I'm
Eugenia.
Just a realist. I'm not. The idea, though, that you've got this price tag that was apparently added up line by line by the Greens, looking at what they were being promised by the Fianna Fáil party with Micheál Martin, is that actually going to be the price aid that comes out? Every one of these three parties in this coalition are posturing to try to get the votes for the upcoming election that will happen next year.
Well, I should say, by the way, we're going to be joined tomorrow morning by Eamon Ryan, so we can ask him directly about the bees.
How many
that are
bees in
his
the bonnet?
The other political story, Gina, that I wanted your view on, and likewise, Jack's, yours as well. A protest is the wrong phrase, because protests suggest that you are trying to change policy. What has happened is more an act of intimidation. The people outside Minister Roderick O'Gorman's home putting up placards, putting up signs. First of all, here's what the Taoiseach described it as.
I spoke to Minister O'Gorman about this situation this morning, because utterly horrified to see the situation. I mean, we all recognise the right to protest in a democracy, but when you see masked people gathering outside somebody's family home, I think that's extraordinarily chilling, disturbing, and quite frankly disgusting. I feel deeply uncomfortable that this situation was allowed to develop outside the home of any person, quite frankly, public figure or otherwise, government or opposition.
Is he right, Gina? Disgusting?
Yes, absolutely. You can have a free demonstration, not wearing balaclavas, not putting intimidating posters right on a fence outside someone's private home. And when I heard this story for the first time, and I was surprised that nobody was detained, nobody was arrested. I found that actually quite fascinating. And then, so now overnight, we've got reports that the Garda Commissioner Drew Harris has come out with an internal memo to remind Gardas of their powers, that there could have been detained, that there could have been questioning, there could have been other things that were brought in to send a message at the time, not after the fact, which is where we are now. And of course, we've also got the Justice Minister, Helen McAtee, saying that she's considering new laws to make protesting outside a politician's home illegal. Intimidation? Absolutely. This idea, and I think too, it's worth noting that apparently in this internal memo that was reported on in today's press, it would also mention that the commissioner said that this idea of wearing balaclavas in particular has sinister overtures in Ireland. That's true. So those types of decisions of what you wear, what you say, how close you are, what you're posting right next to someone's home, that is very, very giving you cause for alarm, and should, I would say, needs to be taken into consideration for laws to prohibit it going forward, because it's hard enough to get people to serve in government these days. My gosh, the online trolling, and now you've got people in person wearing masks, and you've got your family and it's your private home. How safe can you feel? That's not okay. It reminds me of Klan demonstrations. It's very, very scary and should be given, I think, strong change to make it be prevented going forward.
Jack, this, of course, puts us in that question of free speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of protest. Those who were involved in this will undoubtedly say it is absolutely our right to take our protest to the person that we want to impact.
Yeah, but rights aren't untrammeled. You know, you don't get the authority to exercise your right no matter where. And, you know, there we do have a history. And it is possible to constrain protests legally, the safe access stuff that's working its way through the Oireachtas being an example. And I think that we may end up in a place where not necessarily it is restricted outside politicians' homes, but outside homes in general. Mm. Because let's remember as well that a lot of the protests about migration have taken place outside places where people are accommodated. Those are those people's homes as well. So I think that's something to be cognizant of as well.
Is there more of it than there used to be, or was it ever thus? That kind of campaigning outside a politician's home.
Certainly the sense I have is that it's a new thing. Maybe not new associated with the migration crisis. I remember that there was certainly some protests at Simon Harris's home when he was Minister for Health, but I don't think that it has
Stephen
ever been
Donnelly,
seen.
Stephen Donnelly, I think, had a... But this, again, this that's is relatively
it.
Recently.
This is during COVID, you know, and like Stephen Donnelly had to have, if memory serves, security walls put up, certainly security cameras outside the home where his children live. You know, I mean, there is also, on top of the kind of legal, coercive nature of what solutions may be developed and deployed, there's a question of what is just considered to be acceptable, you know, and whether, you know, what kind of culture is giving rise to this. It's deeply problematic, and it's deeply concerning, because where does it end up? That is the question. You know, this kind of coarsening of political debate, this presumption and an imposition of a bad faith argument on all your opponents, and that they are, you know, traitorous. I mean, that kind of language legitimizes all sorts of unsettling potential actions. So it comes against the backdrop and a context where the policing of these protests has been called into question. I think that's what Drew Harris is getting at. He's reminding them of their powers under harassment. It's not necessarily that you're always policing a protest. If it crosses the barrier into something that could be harassment, well, then you have powers as Gardaí there.
Jack, thank you very much. That is Jack Horgan-Jones, political reporter with the Irish Times. And thank you as well to Gina London. Gina is leadership communications expert, Sunday Inn columnist, and of course, former CNN anchor.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiri's.ie
on News Talk.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with two chews a day. Visit RadioBeets, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.